Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
Don't tell me. We're about to go over a huge waterfall.
Yep.
Sharp rocks at the bottom?
Most likely.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Bring it on.
On WGR.
Booyah!
Sports Radio 550.
Hey everybody, welcome in. Hour 3 of Sports Talk Saturday. Thanks for hanging out with me this morning into the afternoon. Saturdays are for college football. That means next here on the Wester Hotline, we will talk some, and of course, the local kind, which is the best kind. Scott Wilson here joining me as the color guy for the UB Bulls. Scott, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate you taking out some time on game day, man.
Yeah, no problem. We're just hanging out down here in the hotel, getting ready for game time. In Lynchburg, Virginia. Wonderful Lynchburg, Virginia.
So, Scott, tell me, what kind of, well, now that it's a home game, what's Liberty doing to keep Hugh Freeze propped upright in the press box? Have you seen what kind of chair? I heard a dental chair last week. Like, is he going to come out with something crazier this week or what?
Well, if I wanted to propose to them that probably the most intimidating way to come onto the field would be if they just put him on a backboard and then a dolly and had him come out like Hannibal Lecter.
Right.
Just put the mask on him and just embrace the whole thing. I don't think they're going to do that.
Yeah.
We talked with somebody earlier this morning from Liberty. They weren't sure. They think he's still going to be up in the press box, like in a dental-style chair, but said that he was a little bit more mobile this week. He was at practice in a golf cart. It's been a really tough situation for Liberty to just kind of deal with that. They don't think he's going to be on the field. And if you can't move, you can't really be on the field.
Right.
They can't have him just on a chair. Like if a play spills over, you know, he's going to get wiped out. You know, they're going to wipe out the guy just sitting in a chair. So from everything I've heard, he's going to be up in like a dental style chair again upstairs in the press box for the third straight game.
First of all, the Hannibal Lecter line was a really good one, right? I wasn't prepared for that. That was really funny.
I mean, think about that. If you're just a visiting team,
right,
and the other
right.
team's coach gets wheeled out, and it's
gosh,
it's like, man, what are we dealing
what
with?
What did we sign up for? Right.
Yeah, I don't think Uber Christian University down here is going to
be
gonna
down
go
with that.
For it,
yeah, but, that, yeah. Likely not. Scott, one of the things that I think maybe I was, I wasn't surprised. I thought UB was going to put up a good fight against Penn State. Obviously, the second half got away from them. But in that what did you learn about this young UB team led by Matt Myers? What did you learn about them in the first half last week playing in a really, really difficult matchup against a team who scored like 60-some-odd points, 70 points the week before against Idaho, and home, under the lights, prime time? Like, what did you learn from that team in their week two matchup?
Well, yeah, I mean, that first week game, Penn State posts 79, and they win by 72 points, and you're kind of saying, oh no.
Yeah.
what's going to happen here? But like you, I thought it was going to be a lot closer than people thought. I thought the Bulls could get in there and really put up a good fight. I think what I learned is, you know, with all the departures and all the big names that left from last year, maybe the expectations for this team need to be adjusted a little bit. I think coming into the season, everybody was kind of conservative about the fact that Tyree Jackson's not there and, you know, the wide receiver core got pretty much decimated by the transfer portal in, you know, Charlie Jones, who was going to step up and play a big role this year, ends up at Iowa. And K.J. Osborne is a captain for the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And your starting tight end ends up, he's got two touchdowns for Maryland this season. There's just so many big names everybody's so familiar with is gone that, like, you know, all right, well, we'll see what happens. And then the fans boo Penn State off the field at halftime because the Bulls are up and really dominated the first half. And I think it just kind of, you know, I'm adjusting my expectations because if they were able to do that, really for three quarters, stay competitive with Penn State on the road, I'm very excited to see what happens at a more level playing field, which is really what they have for the rest of the way here, starting today with Liberty, but then, you know, Temple is obviously going to be a tough game next week, and then the conference schedule, there were four or five runs in the first half where it was blocked perfectly, and the only reason it wasn't a 60-yard touchdown was the fact that Penn State has 6'4", 4'3", freak athletes at linebacker that just kind of appear out of nowhere and made some good tackles. So the Bulls aren't going to see that the rest of the year. I was very impressed with the offensive line, very impressed with Matt Myers making a second start. Yes, he throws the pick six, but, you know, that's really the one mistake he made in the game. He's been very accurate, and for, you know, being a rookie for all intents and purposes as he is this year, I think he's looked really composed and calm and stepped into the role in the big shoes that Tyree Jackson left and has come in and played very well.
Yeah, at halftime, Brady Quinn during the ESPN halftime show mentioned how much that he was impressed in that first half by Matt Myers, and I kind of felt the same. Matt is a local guy, obviously he had tons of success in high school at West Seneca West, winning the state championship and everything else that goes along with that. But listen, I mean, you get to the Division I level and it's a different animal. MAC, whatever conference you want to talk, the Division I game is a totally new animal, and you just don't know what you're going to get from a young quarterback who's a locally grown guy and everything else that goes into that. How much is your recalibration of sorts about what to expect from this team in 2019 based around the competence that you've seen from Matt Meyer early? Now, in that first game, it's tough, right? Like, they're facing an FCS school. They're not really passing the football with a level of probably confidence early in that game. He only has, I think, 10 attempts in that first game. Things change when you play a Power 5 school, and not only that, but you fall behind in the second half. You got to throw the football. But I've been surprised by Matt Myers. He belongs to Division I football. There's no question about it. And it's always the first thing that you think is, this is a young guy, he's a redshirt freshman. Is he going to look like he belongs? Not only does he look like he belongs, Scott, he looks like a player that might be a building block for this program for the next 4 years. And if you are Lance Leipold, I just the gratification you've got to be feeling after 2 weeks of watching this young man perform, you got to feel really good about it so far.
I'm with you. I think the expectations, for me, the biggest question for the team coming into this year, knowing how good the offensive line was and obviously all the talent at running back, it was, can they pass? I mean, can they pass the ball when they need to? They've got good enough players that I think no matter who they play, they're going to be able to run. But, you know, can you keep nine guys out of the box when you've got to? Like, can you do it a little bit? And, boy, he's been more than that. They can throw when they want to, and that kind of changes everything. If they're going to be able to come out and be balanced against teams and not just be so skewed towards the run, I think it opens up the playbook and it opens up a lot of possibilities for the team. And, you know, they've done a good job, the coaching staff and Matt Myers. Tyree Jackson, you know, I love him, and no one had more passing yardage on 20-plus yard plays in the country last year. He was a big play machine. And with Matt, they've replaced just the you know, the jaw-dropping big play ability that Tyree had with a little bit more efficiency and a little bit more controlled drives, and they're not working at the same tempo that they did. You know, obviously he's a young player, so you don't need to hurry up anything, and he doesn't have the full offense yet, but they're just kind of, they've changed and tweaked things just enough so that even though those big plays haven't come yet, they've been able to replace it in other ways. And his development has been great, and I know that they were excited about him when he signed, but like you said, he's a local kid. You don't, you know, there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that. You don't really know what you're going to get until he suits up. And he's 2 for 2 with impressing me. And certainly last week, I'm not worried about the completion percentage or any of that yet. It's just, he's a new kid. He's a young kid, and he's throwing the ball to the right places, and he's been accurate with the ball. And that's really all I need to see from a young kid at this stage of his career. Plus, you know, he can move. They're willing to run with him, which is an added development that they really haven't had with Tyree Jackson in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and maybe the word I want to take out of that, Scott, is like nuance, right? It feels like, and especially if you're Lance Leipold, and you want to run an offense where your quarterback can be a consistent, and you mentioned it, not necessarily a conservative, but just more effective and more, I don't know, it's early, right? I don't want to overhype Matt Myers, but what I feel I saw in that week two game, it makes me feel like they can run a more traditional offense and not one that is maybe a little bit more gimmicky based around a really athletic quarterback who, by all accounts, was a very good passer in college. But to me, I see a higher ceiling as a passer for Matt Myers as a more complete passer than I saw with Tyree Jackson. And that's not meant to be a slight against Tyree. I just think that is maybe what I feel Matt Myers can be in that ceiling, and I'm wondering if you agree with that.
Well, I mean, you're not going to find a bigger Tyree Jackson fan on earth than me. I mean, I love the kid. But I've said it on the air, on the broadcast last week, and I think obviously the level of talent around Matt Myers at this stage of his career is vastly different than what Tyree Jackson had at the same stage, just because Tyree kind of came in that rebuilding phase that the Bulls were in and had a lot of young players and it was a lot of turnover. But just kind of looking at the raw layover of the two players, I think Matt Myers at this stage of his career is ahead of where Tyree Jackson was. And like you said, I don't want to get too ahead of myself,
right,
but Tyree Jackson 2 years later was the conference player of the year. So I feel great about where Matt Myers is already. Like he is far exceeded my expectations because, you know, you want to be conservative, big shoes, local kid, his first starts. He's come in and he looks like he's played a couple of seasons.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I've just been impressed.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It does. He doesn't seem like a guy that's a redshirt freshman who made his two career starts. Like, or better yet, last week, he didn't look like a guy that has one career start under his belt. Like, he looks like a guy that's been around, that's seen some things. So that's got to be a really promising thing for this UB program for sure. Defensively, Scott, you know, it looked good. They looked very good in that first half. Things fell apart a little bit. Obviously, the injury to their punter didn't help in terms of field position and some of the situations that UB defense was put into. What are your thoughts about this defense as they move forward? And especially maybe the question here, Scott, is when they get into MAC play, is this a defense that you expect to help, that will help carry this team, especially early on in conference play, but just overall where you see this defense playing when it gets difficult during conference play?
Well, I love the front four. They got a really good, I think that they're too deep at every position across the front four, which is, you know, the type of depth that they've been trying to get here for a couple of years. I think they finally have that. So they've got a really consistent rotation of good players coming in and out on that defensive line. They like to rotate like every five or six plays just to make sure guys are still fresh in the second half. And I love those front four. I think the ends, like Taylor Riggins, Malcolm Kuntz, Ladarius Mack, they can get pressure. Come conference time, they are going to get pressure. I think the questions start in the secondary, and, you know, it's kind of one of those hand-in-hand things. If the guys are getting pressure up front, the secondary is going to look great. If they're not, then there's probably going to be some opportunities for holes in there with, you know, some of the offenses that the Bulls will be facing come conference time, which are pretty efficient. If that secondary is out there and holding up, then this defense is going to be, I think, really good. I, as of right now, I'm very comfortable with it. To hold Penn State to 78 yards rushing in the game last week was much better. I was looking, you know, hoping for around 150, and that was half of that. So I was very impressed with how they played last week at Penn State. And I was encouraged, too, in the fact that so far this season on third down, they've been able to get off the field. Robert Morris had one drive. But really, if you look at the season as a whole, come third down, they've been able to get teams off the field. And that's a huge indicator for me as far as where the defense is. So they've been reliable through two games. And I think, you know, now that huge specter of Penn State is over, everyone else on the schedule is going to be level competition. So they're going to be able to hold up against everybody else.
All right, last thing before I let you go, Scott. I kind of started today with the topic that I'm sure you at least saw it, and you're probably the most qualified person that I've had today to talk about it because you're so close to the college game. But Tim Tebow's comments this week about paying athletes, and I think especially from your point of view in covering the UB Bulls, that's, you know, UB is not a team that is going to have players that are going to make a ton of money off their likeness like Alabama is. So maybe this is even a more important question for you. But where do you stand in this, considering that California is basically the first state to potentially put into law that college athletes are allowed to make money off their likeness? Where do you stand on the issue? And do you believe some of the things that Tim Tebow said about, you know, it sort of ruining the college game if players were to be paid? I'm interested in your take on that.
I don't know about ruin. I think it certainly changes, because if you're going to pay players beyond saying you can use your name and likeness, I think that it changes the group of five teams become a separate division of football, because they're just not going to be able to pay players. I mean, MAC teams aren't going to pay football players. Mountain West teams aren't going to pay football players. The Sun Belt isn't going to pay players. So I think that you end up, if that is what's happening, I think you end up with a separate division of football, and it's all the Power Fives, and that's it. And, you know, and then everybody else kind of falls in different divisions below that. I'm a traditional guy. I love the fact that UB got to go on the road last week and lead at Penn State and try to get that upset. On the other hand, being as close to this as I am, and I've been involved with here at Division One. I mean, I've been involved and been around the Buff State program at mm-hmm. Division Three. I mean, the time commitment and the physical commitment that these kids make, I think if the average person actually saw what some of these kids' weeks look like, they would have a very different take on if they should get paid or not. The level of commitment and the level of work that these kids are really putting in, I think really it deserves to be paid. I think they should be paid. I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Because they're colleges and universities, so much of this is centered around when everybody thinks about paying athletes, it's football and basketball. You're talking about paying football and basketball, and it's illegal with Title IX. You got to pay everybody. So you're not just talking about paying football. You're talking
right.
about paying rowing. And where does that money come from? It's for most schools, I think even for a lot of Power Five schools, it's, I don't know how those waters get navigated. I just don't know how you thread that needle. Everyone has to get paid. What's the scale that gets paid? Like, does, you know, the badminton team make the same
right.
scale as the football
yeah.
team? Even though, you know, like, if you look at a small school like Kent State, they're making $1.3 million today to get pounded by Auburn. And it's probably tough to say, you know, hey, field hockey is going to make the same amount that those kids are going to make,
sure.
even though they're about to bring in $1.5 million to get their legs broken all day. I don't know. I mean, I certainly feel like they deserve to get paid. I just don't know what it looks like. I just don't know how it happens. It absolutely starts with the name and likeness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a for sure. And I know that people can do seedy things with it in the SEC, but, you know, that's going to happen anyway.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if
they walk that line and say kids can have their name and likeness, but while they're at school, like, they put in a
it defers.
Account.
That was my thought. I think it's logical. It just defers till
right.
after your playing career. I feel like that's fine, and it maybe helps us steer this in the right direction, because I think you're it's almost like the profit sharing portion of this is really the difficult one that I don't think we're ever going to have like real clarity on. But player likeness, I agree. There's got to be something where we defer this, or it goes towards it. Something needs to be done in that arena. So I'm right there with you on that one, Scott, for sure.
Yeah. And if we start paying player likeness, can we bring back the NCAA video game?
Correct.
Because, my goodness.
You're preaching to the choir on that one.
It's a hole in my life. It's a hole in my life.
You're not kidding.
So.
You're not kidding, my friend. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. Good luck this afternoon and calling the game, and we'll do this again soon, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Scott Wilson there of UB. He is the color man there. When we come back, Greg Cassell was on with with Murph and Tasker earlier this week. You'll hear him next here on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Greg Cosell of NFL Films here with Steve Tasker and John Murphy.
Greg Cosell is back with us. Hello, Greg. It's me and Steve up here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on.
Murph, Steve, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Want to let people know that that show, NFL Matchup, with you and who you got? You and Jaws and...
No, me, Matt Bowen, and Sal Pal.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's
I'm trying
like
to
Matt
promote
Bowen.
The thing. Yeah, our buddy Matt Bowen. It's on tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. on ESPN2. Sunday, 4 a.m., 6:30 a.m. on ESPN, NFL Matchup. You guys, and you in particular, have looked at the Buffalo Bills, Greg, and you mentioned in the break before we came on with you how impressed you were with what you saw from Josh Allen last week, huh?
Very impressed. And you know what I found very fascinating was their first 18 plays through their first three possessions, guys, were called passes. Very interesting game plan. And I thought Josh was poised, composed. The game was not too fast for him mentally. I like the kinds of throws they asked him to make. They were short throws. They were timing throws. The kinds of throws that we always talked about that he had to do better in order to become a consistent quarterback. I thought for the most part he was pretty accurate, good ball placement. These were throws that demanded pace and touch, and he made these kinds of throws. It was kind of interesting and fun to watch.
What do you make of the four turnovers? I mean, that was the story coming out of the first half of that game, how it all kind of seemed to go away, except they were only down 6 points. What'd you make of the four turnovers?
I mean, the first interception, which was the touchdown by the Jets, was not on Josh, you know. And then obviously the sack fumble; those things can't happen. Then the bad snap situation—that's a fluky thing. We know it can't happen, but that's fluky. And I'm trying to specifically remember the other one now.
The other one was
a tip ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Tipped ball at the line of scrimmage.
You know, that's fluky too. So I mean, look. It's easy to say they can't happen, and we know they can't, but I don't think they were representative in any way of poor play by Josh Allen.
Hey, Greg, what did you think of kind of the offensive look the Bills showed in that game? They came out there, started the game with kind of I formation personnel, and then just spread everybody out wide. What were they doing, and what did you think of that approach?
Well, it's interesting because all of those first 18 plays that we spoke about a moment ago that started the game all – had what we call 21 personnel, two backs and one tight end, and the backs were Singletary and DeMarco. And what they did with that is something we've seen a team like the New England Patriots do for years, where they'll spread the formation, they'll be very multiple with their formations out of two backs and one tight end. And the Bills kind of did the same thing. And I think it's a positive. It was not what I expected to see in the opener for the Bills. I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't know exactly what we were going to expect, but I think the thing that got us and that I noticed was that they went with a little pace early on, and also they changed formations. Josh would go up under center and then back away, break the formation, and force the defense to talk a lot.
Yes, without question. And you know, the interesting thing about that is that also says that there's a confidence level in Josh, because you got to remember one thing, and you know this, Steve, when you move, the defense moves too.
Right.
So the quarterback has to be aware of all those things. The defense does not stay static when you move your personnel. So they feel, obviously, the coaching staff does, that Josh is comfortable with that. And then they ran a lot of basic concepts, which everybody runs, but they're defined concepts, what we call mesh, where you have the two shallow crossers, levels concepts against zone, where you have different levels of receivers to attack zone, one underneath, one over the top. You know, the basic concepts that provide relatively defined reads and looks. I actually thought that his third throw of the game was really good. It was only 9 yards to Brown, but it came on that mesh concept, and they played zone. And what you normally get with mesh is because mesh is meant for man with those crossers, but they put what's called a sit route right behind that mesh, and that's the throw you make versus zone because it's available. And he read it immediately, and he just hit Brown with a good throw for 9 yards. And, you know, it's little plays like that, the detail plays, that make for great quarterbacking. And Josh made a lot of those kinds of plays in this game, a lot of those throws.
Well, coming into this year, you know, you look back at last year, he led the team in rushing. Yes, on Sunday, it was 10 rushes for 38 yards. What'd you think of that stat line?
Well, I think in an ideal world, as he grows as a quarterback, the rushes decrease because he becomes quicker with what he sees. He eliminates what's not there and isolates what is there quicker. The good ones do it before the snap, but then you also have to confirm and validate after the snap. So I think the more he plays, the more experience he gets, the more he sees, the more he gets comfortable. In an ideal world, the less he runs. Unless it's by design. There'll always be a few design runs for him, and there were some design runs in this game, obviously.
Well, there were two that I can think of. One was a short yardage where it was 8 yards around the end, the left end, and then another was a quarterback sneak that he got stuffed on right before the turnover. So that if you take those away, you get 7 runs for 30 yards or 8 runs for 30 yards. So that's a kind of about where you want,
right? I think there was one that I remember that was the design where he took the snap and he ran left. It was a designed run. I forget the distance, but, you know, and then like I said, you're going to have a few design runs for him, Steve, because he can run well, obviously. And you do want to take advantage of that depending on game situation, field location, things of that nature. But you certainly don't want him scrambling 9, 10, 12 times a game out of the pocket on called passes.
Yeah, the one run that I forgot about, we just saw, is a touchdown run. I forgot about
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Greg Cosell on the line with us, executive producer, analyst on NFL matchup on ESPN this weekend. I have one more question for you about the Jets game and maybe how it translates into the future. Devin Singletary on the field for 70% of the snaps, but limited carries for him. What do you think the future holds for him, and what did you think of his game against the Jets?
Well, he only had 4 runs with all those snaps because of the way they chose to play, but I like Singletary. You know, his first 2 runs of 20 and 23 yards, they were both eye back runs to the left side of the formation where they pulled Morrison Spain. His 3rd run, if I remember correctly, was what we call same side power. It was out of the gun. And his 4th run was another eye back run. So 3 of his 4 runs, he was the eye back with Allen under center. You know, and I think that you'll see more of him. He's got some juice to him. You see this run right here where he bounced it outside. You see the lateral quickness, the lateral juice. You know, he's got that. He'll definitely be a part of the rotation. How many runs he gets, you know, that will be determined on a week-to-week basis. I'm sure it'll be a function of the opponent as well. But I think he's clearly, look, he was on the field for those first 18 snaps. Yep. As you said, Murph, he played 70% of the snaps. You're not out there unless the coaching staff believes that you can be out there and they trust what you can do. So we'll see. I think we'll see more of him with the ball in his hand moving forward.
One other guy I've got to ask you about after the Jets game. We came into this season and the Bills, you know, the quote unquote number one receiver the Bills never had or didn't have. John Brown certainly emerged as at least Josh Allen's favorite target with the catches and 123 yards. What'd you think of John Brown's performance?
Yeah, and John Brown's always been a guy who could run. You know, I think the kinds of throws they'll make to him, I remember the 28-yard crosser late in the first half, which was a great throw by Josh. It was your basic post cross. He ran away from Johnson. You know, he can run away from people. Obviously, the winning touchdown, it was, I believe it was cover one, and he was matched up against Darrell Roberts. And you have to feel good about that matchup. Because Roberts is not a big-time NFL corner. Brown is your guy. It was a kind of a stutter go or a stop and go. You know, and they teach quarterbacks, Steve, as you well know, if the defender's back is turned and he can't see the ball, you throw it to that receiver, and that's basically what that play was. And Allen actually turned it loose, threw it a little bit to the inside, but because Darrell Roberts had no idea where the ball was, it was a touchdown.
We're talking with Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films. He crunches tape, breaks down tape, and we got to talk now about the Giants, and we start with Saquon Barkley. Over the year, over the year in one game, what have teams done to try to handle Saquon Barkley? What might be the best approach for the Bills to take in this game this week, Greg?
I think they probably go to church on Saturday night.
Yeah, I am. I will. That's for sure.
Yeah. Look, that guy's terrific. You know, we can sit here and debate, and I don't rip coaches. I just don't do that. We can sit here and debate how much he should or shouldn't get the ball. You know, the sense, I think, for a lot of people is that the Giants offense should run through Saquon Barkley. It hasn't really, and it certainly didn't last week, in a game that was closer than the score. We know he's special. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You know, he's one of those backs that can line up as an I back and be a phenomenal runner. You can detach him from the formation. He's an excellent pass receiver. He obviously is phenomenal. Contact balance, can run through people, run after catch ability. There's nothing Saquon Barkley cannot do. I think your game plan starts with Saquon Barkley from a defensive perspective. And when I say that, I know that's a platitudinous statement. I'm thinking more in terms of tactically, how you approach it, you know, getting an extra guy in the box, making sure maybe there's always an unblocked defender based on the Giants' run concepts, things of that nature.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It really does should run through him. And maybe even at this point, with the injuries that the Giants have coming into this week, maybe the maybe the passing game runs through him as well. Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of injuries at wide receiver, and they weren't, you know, some would argue that the receiving core wasn't top line to begin with, but I mean, Shepard's out. Lattimore, I guess, is questionable. I know you mentioned Slayton being out. He's a rookie from Auburn.
Yep.
You know, they're very thin, so you could easily see them line up with two tight ends a lot in this game, use Barkley as a wild card, move him around, or you know, and I think they're going to come out and run the ball. And, you know, with the premise that, we need to just, if I could quickly, we need to jump to the Giant D, because this is a game where the Giant D has to be a factor. And there's no other way to put it, but they were absolutely terrible last week and at times embarrassing. And it's I don't think they'll be that way for the season. Week one has some of those performances, both positive and negative, where everybody overreacts. But they were quite honestly very bad last week.
Yeah, they exhibited a ton of problems in the back end of their defense last week.
Oh, yeah.
Are those problems fixable in 1 week? I mean, were they physical or were they mental?
I think they were mental.
Yeah.
And I think they're fixable. It just, you know, again, Steve, you know one thing. The coaches coach, players play. So it's going to be coached. The question is, how do the players react on the field on Sunday?
Right.
So we'll see. But those are fixable errors. They were mental errors. Guys not recognizing things, not playing with their eyes. I mean, you're seeing a touchdown right here. Nobody within 7, 8, 9 yards of the receiver. I remember the Randall Cobb touchdown as well. No one was around him. You know, these are fixable things. Because they have to do with eye discipline. They have to do with recognition of formations and splits. These are all coachable things.
So what would the Buffalo Bills offense want to do to attack what seem to be weaknesses in the Cowboys defense? What should they be looking to do this week, Greg?
Well, what the Cowboys did a lot to the Giants, I mean, is they really threw the ball, you know, in some ways more than they ran it. The RPO game was very effective for the Cowboys against the Giants. I think the one thing you want to be careful if you're the Bills is you're playing a defense overall that's not really good. Okay, so to me, and I'm not a coach, but to me, you don't want to step outside of what you think you can do, because you're not playing a defense that theoretically can take away a lot of things. So instead of saying, hey, let's try this week, you stay with your approach. You continue to build on what you do well. You continue to build with Josh Allen with the kinds of throws and play calls that you believe he can do well. And I think that if you do that, you'll have success against this defense.
Yeah, I think at this point you just do what you do and play your game and ask your guys to play what they do well. That is, if you know at this early spot of the season, you have to know your guys, which some teams have a trouble knowing it when the games are for real. None of these teams really know who they are anyway, but if you got some things you're confident in, go with it.
I couldn't agree more. You know, look, every once in a while you play a defense that you have to account for certain things and you must do that. The Giants, to me, are not that defense, so I think the Bills run their offense, work on what they want to work on, keep getting better at what they do.
One more question for you about this game, the Bills game coming up that I have for you, Greg, and that's and it's back to the other side of the ball. Eli Manning, how did he look to you against Dallas, and what should the Bills expect to see from him?
You know, I don't think he looked bad at all. In fact, I was, you know, again, they have so many injuries, but I was kind of impressed with their offense. I mean, I think that there's some things they can get done. Maybe it's not this week because they'll be down so many people, but Eli was not the reason they lost that game. I thought he played solid football. You know, I think he's at the point in his career where he's not the driving force of an offense, and to my way of thinking, shouldn't be asked to be that guy. So we'll see what they do this week with all the injuries, but I would really expect, Murph, that Saquon Barkley, you know, look, unless the Bills run away with the score early, but if this game is close, to me, this has to be a Saquon Barkley game. 25 carries, maybe 7-8 receptions. He would, to me, he has to have over 30 touches in this game.
More from Greg Cassell when we come back. You're listening to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. More from Greg Cassell.
We got to move on to maybe around the league. One of the most unbelievable stories coming out of New York is had to do with the Jets. Sam Darnold is sick. I'll just put it that way. And I'm not going to ask you about any of the stuff and what that means to the Jets. But Trevor Siemian is going to get the start for the Jets. You've seen him play in the past. What do you think about Trevor Siemian?
I think Trevor Siemian is one of those guys you can line up and play with as long as the other parts of your team work effectively. I guess Le'Veon Bell has a shoulder. I guess we don't know if he's going to play. If he can play and is capable of playing pretty much the full game, I think you have to lean on him. I think you have to work the play-action pass game. I think you have to hope your defense can keep the game in hand on Monday night against Cleveland. Siemian, you know, when he was in Denver, there was a stretch there where he played effectively. They ran the ball. They executed the play-action pass game, and he executed and orchestrated the offense. That's what he is. Is he a high-level talent? No. But if the pieces are not working, Steve, then he's not the guy that's necessarily going to make the big-time throws that allow you to win the game.
Okay, so if that's Trevor Siemian, who is Gardner Minshew, the guy taking over for Nick Foles in Jacksonville?
Well, I think we should probably put on our Gardner Minshew mustaches
exactly.
Before we talk about him.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I watched him coming out of Washington State quite a bit, and he's under 6'1". He's not physically imposing, so he doesn't look the part. And he was in the air raid offense, which a lot of people dismiss. But he played with a great sense of pace, touch, timing, very accurate thrower, knew where to go with the ball. He exhibited those same traits last week. Now, the elevated completion percentage you have to be careful with, because as the game progressed, Steve Spagnuolo, the DC for the Chiefs, went to a lot of prevent, and he threw a lot of checkdowns, and that elevated the completion percentage. But up to that point, he looked exactly like he looked at Washington State. Now, they're going to go into Houston. Houston has a good D-line, good front seven, a lot of pass rush concepts. We'll see when he plays from play one how all that works out. He'll clearly be under more pressure in this game than he was against the Chiefs.
One more question I got about another team is Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers going in and getting thumped in New England. Are the Pittsburgh Steelers okay?
I think they have some things, Steve, to work out. They couldn't run the ball, and I think that hurt them. And I think after Juju Smith-Schuster, they're not certain yet what their wide receiver situation is. I mean, they have James Washington and Dante Moncrief, but I don't think they know yet what those guys are in the context of their offense. And when you just have one receiver like that, it's tough. So I think they're one of those teams that early in the season, they have some things that they need to get worked out, and we don't know how that'll play out just yet.
Hey, Greg, I'm sure you guys will talk about it on your show, the NFC Championship game rematch out in Los Angeles, 4:25 on Sunday, the Saints and the Rams. And a lot of the attention has been focused on the Nickell Robey Coleman play, but this game is much more than that, isn't it? That was a really good competitive game last year. These might be the two best teams in the NFC at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a very tactical game. I mean, when you play against the Rams offense, and by the way, the Rams offense in the last two meaningful games, teams have figured some things out, and I think it's going to be up to Sean McVay to kind of, you know, see where he goes. But the two things you know you're going to get when you face the Rams offense, you're going to get tempo. They selectively play with tempo where they just get up on the ball. They may not snap it right away, but they'll get right up on the ball. And the other thing they do a ton of is that jet sweep action, and you have to figure out how you want to deal with that so guys don't get out of position. So those are two things. On the other side, I think when I watch tape, what really is a problem for defenses is the Saints tend to line up Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas on the same side of the formation, to the boundary side, the short side of the field, and that's a tough deal for defenses.
All right, one thing, one last team I want to ask you about. They're coming up on the Bills schedule in a couple of weeks, and I thought it was a really surprising outcome in Seattle when Cincinnati went
there.
They gave Seattle all they could handle week one of the season on the road. That outcome surprised me. I know the Cincinnati Bengals lost, but they lost by 1 point against a Seattle Seahawks team that's got some pretty high expectations.
I thought their offense, and I watched that tape, their offense, Steve, looked really good. I mean, Zach Taylor's the head coach there. He came from the Rams. There were a lot of those Ram principles. To me, Andy Dalton fits that style of offense. It's a timing rhythm offense, define the reads, define the throws, get the ball out, let the quarterback stay in a rhythm. That's what Dalton is to me. Now, he's not as physically imposing or as smooth a thrower as Jared Goff, but in some ways he's stylistically similar. And I think this offense fits him. And he's kind of been, you know, thrown in the dustbin a little bit, you know, relegated there because of the last couple of years. But, you know, what was it, 3-4 years ago, he was on his way to being league MVP when he got hurt. You know, Andy Dalton is a capable NFL quarterback, and I think this is the style of offense that fits him. And, hey, when you guys play him, maybe A.J. Green's back too, so who knows?
We'll talk a lot more about Dalton and the Bengals and A.J. Green next week. Greg, thanks for this. Great to catch up with you again this Friday. We'll talk again next Friday.
All right, guys, really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Greg.
That was NFL Films' Greg Cassell. I'm Nate Geary. We've got Derek Kramer. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Thanks to all of my guests. We had a bunch of them today. Chad DeDominicis. We had Sal Capaccio. We had Joe Marino. We had Scott Wilson. And, of course, we had Mike Catalano. So thanks to everyone listening. I'll be back tomorrow for pregame. You can hear Derek first thing in the morning, 7 a.m. with Breakfast with the Bills. I take over from there and lead you into Kick on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. So thanks to everybody listening today. Sports Talk Saturday. Until next week. Thanks for everybody that listened today here on WGR.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.